It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard round the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host, Mark Young. What's on your mind today, Mark? A lot going on. It's funny. Rush has been off all week because he said nothing's going to happen. And yet, you know, we almost have a trade agreement with China if they step up to the plate. But Trump said he got one with Japan, apparently. I mean, and the G7 was supposed to be a total failure, and everybody was supposed to be embarrassed.
Well, the breaking news on that is, Chuck, that the Chinese have contacted people at the White House and said that they need to bring a peaceful settlement to this trade dispute.
Well, they're getting their butt kicked economically, so I bet they do.
And that they want to get back to the table now.
Why is it that, you know, this stuff is going on, and it seems like no one is interested in investigating, journalists anyway, investigating what's really happening or commenting on what's really happening? It's all Trump failed and it's not going to happen and China's going to clean our clock and we shouldn't be doing this with China and we hate everything that's going on with the tariff wars and blah, blah, blah. And yet, incrementally, Trump seems to be making progress, but he just never gets credit for it.
The problem, Chuck, as our listeners know and you know, and that is that real journalism is dead when it's amongst the major media. The only real journalism is happening on the secondary tier of the news world, not on the major newses. Because the news people are, when you look at NBC and CNN, they're run by the left. They are staffed by the left.
They've always been run by the left, though. There's nothing different, I don't think, in the history. I'm 78 years old. It's not as if I was born yesterday. The news media has always been run by the left. The New York Times, the Washington Post, all the three media, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, have always been left. I think it's a little more obvious now that they're on the left. They kind of covered it for a long time. And maybe that's the difference. I don't know that they've just emerged out from under their rock and let everybody know what they're doing.
Chuck, I'm going to give you three examples here.
Okay.
This is what's going on in the major news media. NBC News reports heterosexuality is just not working anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you get these kind of stories, which is, it's like, let's take the normal and turn it upside down. And whatever is abnormal is now normal, or what we considered abnormal before. In human behavior, in our culture, in our politics, and whatever. I mean, it's like socialism is the way to go. When we have reams of history that prove that socialism doesn't work at all, but no, that's the way to go.
It's just not working. Heterosexuality's just not working out.
What does that mean? I mean, you know, so you're not going to have children anymore, I guess.
No, I mean, it's just not working out.
From another country.
and you know what? I'm going to do something.
That's happening all over the world. Europe is big on the Germany and France and, well, not so much France, but Germany for sure and Britain. They're all, you know, all of their, they're not having kids.
I'm going to do something a little different. We have a guest today, and our guest today is Megan Fox. Mm-hmm. And Megan Fox is from PJ Media. You and I follow her, and she does great work.
Right.
I want to bring Megan into our upfront conversation here because I'm watching her and she is dying to comment on this topic of heterosexuality is just not working out. Megan, welcome to Blunt Force Truth. Is heterosexuality not working out for you?
Yeah, I guess I've been married almost 20 years now, and I think it's time to try women, I guess, because.
Well, I've been trying women for 60 years. It's working out fine.
I say, you know, it's funny that you bring this up. My mother just brought it up to me this morning, and we were laughing. I was laughing about it. She was so incensed, and I just was laughing. I couldn't stop laughing about it because, listen, I know they're trying really hard, but you're never going to take away men's desire for women and women's desire for men. That's just not happening. It's just not happening. So whatever they're saying, it's not working. I mean, I don't know. It's working for everybody I know. We've got families out here, traditional families with lots of kids, and I've got three myself, and they all want to be married and have kids too. So I don't know.
You're raising a dysfunctional family, obviously.
There's this whole culture of just demonizing all men. We're just, you know, the worst things that ever happened. Of course, some of these people have children who are boys and they're going to raise them in this environment. It just makes no sense to me. It's like they just push stuff at you through the media. I watch The Bachelor in Paradise. I've been watching that.
Me too. I'm so glad. Oh my gosh, I just caught up on it last night. Yes, right. Please, let's talk about this. It's my favorite topic.
It's like a show about nothing. I mean, they're like 25-year-olds all stuck on an island and none of them can communicate with each other or with themselves. And it's just, I mean, after doing Love Connection for all the years, 12 years, and talking to people about this kind of stuff, it just amuses me to watch this and say, we're going to find love for everybody. This is what it's all about. And everyone's confused. Nobody knows what they really want. We got a couple of lesbians on there who are now, you know, that's the new thing. We got two women who are after each other.
Well, it's because heterosexuality is just not working, Chuck.
Well, exactly. So it's like following that theme that heterosexuality isn't working. However, they're a little outnumbered on Paradise Island. But, yeah, give me your...
Now, I got a couple more news items I want to throw into you, too, Chuck. We were talking about... let me stick with the news here for a minute.
You're interfering with my Bachelor in Paradise.
We'll come back to it, but we already jumped the topic. I'm trying to keep us on track here.
Okay.
Newsweek just ran an opinion piece saying that humanity needs to embrace cannibalism as a means to fight climate change.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, so I'm talking about this, nothing this crazy Newsweek. About that. Okay, but this is Newsweek.
Yeah, but what difference does it make?
But this
They're all
is
crazy yeah. hell.
This is my point, though. This is what's considered mainstream news.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Are suggesting
it
that
wasn't just Newsweek either? There were like 3 or 4 articles in major papers about cannibalism all at the same time. It's like they're trying to push this idea now. And one of them was human beings can get over their revulsion. Because look at the people who work in slaughterhouses, for instance. Most people can't do that. But if you work in the environment, eventually you get over it and you learn to. Why is the science community trying to tell us we need to get over our revulsion of cannibalism?
What? Well, I would think that if you spent enough time watching the Democratic debates, you'd get over cannibalism, wouldn't you?
Yeah, right.
Wasn't there some
feedback?
Wasn't there some cannibalization going on of Kamala Harris by Tulsi Gabbard?
Yeah, well, Tulsi Gabbard is not in the next debate. You know that.
Yeah. Now, here's the third story I pulled out for you here, Chuck, and that is woman writes a letter to the newspaper, which gets published because of her fear of seeing a man wearing a Trump shirt at Trader Joe's.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've been to Trader Joe's many times.
Yeah. And you would be frightening people.
Well, actually, I was.
So she wrote.
They were a little overdone.
A little bad, but let me give you the run here. The past Tuesday, at Trader Joe's in Tucson, a male shopper came in wearing a Trump 2020 T-shirt. My husband and I immediately felt threatened and observed the entire mood of the store shift as well. Yeah. We quickly and cautiously finished our shopping and moved to the checkout. Before we left, my husband asked the checker, a Caucasian woman, to convey to the management.
Her.
Wait, did they just assume her identity?
They did assume. Yeah, they assumed she was a woman and white.
And the
That's right.
To convey to management the anxiety that we had just experienced at suddenly finding ourselves in a confined space with a man who looked the part of a typical Trump terrorist. We were not prepared for our checker's response, thanking us both profusely. She grabbed my husband's hand like a lifeline and gingerly pushed his fingers to her own neck for him to feel her pulse. The Trump supporter had just been through her line and her heart was still racing with fear. She actually needed us to help calm her down. I wanted to run after this man.
Somebody get these people some medication immediately.
Oh, my God.
Health crisis.
Trader Joe's. What did I see the other day? I said 100 years ago, a 20-year-old man would say, I just killed a bear with my bare hands. Today, a 20-year-old guy would say, is that organic creamer in my coffee? I mean, that's where we are today.
Well, that's one of the things. You've got to give Putin credit. I mean, you see Putin. I mean, he's out there shaking hands with a bear and, you know, killing him with his teeth and stuff.
All I can say here, Mark, is that our society is ripe for plundering. So whatever barbarians are at the gate, come now. Now is your chance.
Yeah. So on one side, we go into an emotional meltdown because someone has a T-shirt that says Trump 2020. But on the flip side, let's be cannibals.
It's crazy. I'll tell you what, though. Here, you think it's this? These stories are not untrue, by the way, though. This is how.
Oh, no. Yeah. This is real.
I went into a grocery store as an experiment with a MAGA hat on. And I was with my son, who was 4 at the time. And the checker refused to check out my groceries.
Stop.
Oh, no, that happened.
Are you serious?
That happened.
All right. And I'm going to show you something here. Here's how you mess them up. Now, we have this hat that is available on bloodforcetruth.com. But notice it says, make America a republic again.
Uh-huh. I love it.
So when you wear this, so I wear this out, and then people look at me, and then they're about to explode. And then they look at it, and then they turn, as Chuck would say, into the RCA dog. They go,
that's right.
Yeah. I've got one that says, make feminism sane again. But, I mean, I realize that I really can't wear it in any of them in public, though, because it actually puts my kids in danger. You know,
exactly.
These kids are mentally unhinged. And if I were a man, I would wear it all day long everywhere I went because, you know, I wouldn't be worried about that. But as a woman with small children and these unhinged, crazy people everywhere, no, I don't feel safe wearing it. And I think it's a real shame. And I think the president needs to do more to stop this kind of behavior. But it is the media's fault. I just rewatched the election returns from 2016, which is something it's something I do regularly. And I was watching it again yesterday, actually. And one of the hosts at the Javits Center was saying, it was when it was clear that, you know, Hillary was losing, and he was saying minorities and LGBTQ, black people, Asian people are all terrified this evening. They're wondering, are they going to be ostracized tomorrow? And I'm like, who is this person and why are they saying this and they're not shutting them down? What evidence do you have that Muslim people and this and that are going to be treated any differently tomorrow than they were today? And then you find out in the coming weeks, they pull these hoaxes. I've written about the hoaxes several times, about the hijab hoaxes and claiming that people, Trump supporters, ripped hijabs off heads. That never happened. It literally never happened. I actually have written about that in my book, Believe Evidence, The Death of Due Process. There's a whole chapter in there about the hijab hoaxes.
Well, you don't need evidence anymore.
Said we believe the truth, not facts.
Yeah, right.
Slight adjustment. We believe our truth, not facts. Mm-hmm. So now I was wearing my MAGA, Blunt Force Truth version of the MAGA hat all weekend. I had no issues. Now, oddly enough, I was wearing it riding a Harley Davidson, wearing leather, and had a 9mm Glock on my hip. No problems.
A terrorist look. Come on.
Terrorist.
A MAGA terrorist. No, is that what they're calling him?
Oh, my goodness. So I was looking at some of your stories, Megan, and you have a story in here about CVS is now in cahoots with the president to ban birth control. How insane is that?
This is the dumbest story. So there is
Isn't as dumb as he wants to nuke the hurricane?
It might be dumber. I mean, okay. there's this service called the Pill Club. And apparently all it does is deliver tampons and birth control to your door. Hmm. Kind of like Amazon for women's issues, you know?
So something Beto O'Rourke would be using.
Right. I had never heard of this, but they claim to be a service for women in rural areas who just can't get to the CVS once a month.
Yeah.
Well, I happen to be one of those rural women, and I get to the CVS at least twice a month. I mean, it's you go into town. I mean, it's not like people don't go into town.
Isn't it amazing their perception of that? Do they think that they think that people live in rural communities, live in a cave someplace,
right,
on foot with a long stick to help them, you know, make their way to wherever they're going?
And there's only 8,000 CVS stores, so they're really hard to find.
So this is really fake news, because the Pill Club got angry because CVS renegotiated its contract and decided not to pay it as much. They didn't want to pay the Pill Club as much. It was costing them too much money, and so they raised their prices. And the Pill Club, instead of either passing on that to the consumer or figuring it out amongst themselves, they took to Twitter to demonize CVS by claiming that CVS was stopping women from getting health care. This is so wrong. It's so false. It's such a false narrative. It's not what happened at all. CVS responded by saying, we'd like to remind you people that, you know, we have 36,000 CVSs across the country, which you are welcome to come to anytime and get your birth control at the very same low price. It will not be, we're not doing anything to interrupt your service. We just aren't working with the Pill Club in the way they want us to. Now, I also looked up online, hey, what if I am someone who can't get to I can't get to a store and need it delivered. There are about 1,000 other services that will deliver your pills to your house.
But the left has proof of their story. See, you keep talking about evidence, and they have the hard evidence.
The feelings, right?
No. The hard evidence is the reason CVS is trying to stop women from getting birth control pills and cutting their nose off despite their face by not being able to bill insurance companies for said pills is because 12 of their board members are men.
Oh, and one of them, at least one, donated to the Trump campaign. That's really the issue here.
There you go. That's hard proof.
That's why they're making it such an issue, is that somebody on the CVS board donated to the Trump campaign some small amount.
And but this is what they think is evidence today.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So let me ask you something, Megan, because you're right in the middle of this all the time. We're kind of on the periphery. What drives all these things? I mean, these crazy stories, they seem to be in mainstream media, but they're driven by something else. Is it Twitter and Facebook?
It's Twitter. The evil Twitter.
It's you, Chuck Woolery.
It's me driving those things, of course.
Twitter is so awful. It's probably the worst thing that's ever happened to our republic. But at the same time, of course, I enjoy it immensely. I think everybody kind of does. It's like I
do too. I had to send out a tweet the other day saying, I don't really hate anybody. Although I know you hate me. Sorry.
And then you saw the comments, and then all the comments were, oh yeah, we have proof that Chuck Woolery hates people.
Right. I mean, it's
Twitter
insane.
Twitter is driving all this weird news of the world.
That's what I think.
I mean, it really is. People are, and if you're not on Twitter, you have a totally different view of the world. I don't know what that's like, because I've never not been on Twitter, and I really need to get off, but I don't know where else I would go for all my news.
It's like heroin.
It is.
You can't, once you're on there, you just can't get off. You can't quit.
And
I think, because all of a sudden you get a great thought, and you think, okay, I think this is great. Let's see if anybody else does.
That explains a lot. Sometimes I'll be with Chuck, and he'll be like this, you know, tapping his, trying to get a vein before he starts tweeting.
Well, and the other thing is, too, if you're in the news business like I am, there's no better place to get breaking news than Twitter. Because right. You have an entire army of, it's like having an army of people working for you, because they're all out there with their cameras, just regular citizens, putting news out on Twitter before any of the news agencies can get to it. So in that sense, it really has opened up a whole world of news.
And it has allowed this president to just mess with the media.
Oh, totally.
Because he just talks to people at 3 o'clock in the morning if he feels like it. And these idiots have to climb out of bed and
I know.
And write a story.
I have my phone set to alert me when he tweets, you know. And the other night I was going to bed, and it was late. It was after midnight. And all of a sudden my phone starts going bing, 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 bing. And I'm like, well, who is this? Like, oh, it's the president. You know? At 1 o'clock in the morning, just ticking everyone off. You know, in one sense, it is the way he's gotten around the press and the major hatred for him. He controls the news cycle completely through his Twitter feed. And it's kind of wonderful to watch. Because he can make them dance and jump and, you know, do anything he wants. And they still haven't caught on.
You know, they'll never catch on. They refuse to understand who he is, which is great for him in a way, and great for us, because all their attacks are meaningless because they always miss the mark.
Always.
They don't know where the mark is.
They're always playing catch up. Right.
Yeah. They're always saying, well, he's so unpredictable. Exactly.
But what's very predictable is that he will always change the conversation at the exact moment he needs to do it. Mm-hmm. And they keep on letting him do it. I can't believe they keep on letting him do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are people who report on how many scoops of ice cream this man has.
It's because they're so emotional. It's really what it is.
Remember,
they're not intellectual at all. They're just emotional.
Remember when he put ketchup on a steak?
Oh, yeah.
That was impeachable.
This most recent outrage with him joking about being the chosen one. Right. I laughed so hard when I saw him say it. I started giggling. And then all of a sudden, everyone is acting like this was true and real and like he meant it. It's like, are you stupid or something? I can't figure out why the left has no sense of humor at all. They never get his jokes.
I'll tell you, I went to a comedy club this weekend, which I never do.
I was about to say, what happened to you?
In Austin. And I realized, because some of my best friends were comedians growing up and comedians early in my career. And I think I know what funny is and how, you know, sarcasm and kind of off the center, bizarre kinds of things are. I get it. They are so angry. Comedians are as angry as anybody, and their audience is as angry as they are too. And it's really interesting to sit in the midst of it and watch and see what they talk about and what they think is funny. And what they think is funny is total ridicule. You just take something and just ridicule it and rip it apart and everything else, and it's hysterically funny to them.
And you have to use a lot of vulgar language to do it.
Well, yeah, you know, it's
base. You can't be funny without obscenities.
Yeah, comedy's dead.
Comedy is
as dead as journalism.
Although I will say that there are some few shining stars who refuse to bow down to the political correctness, and Dave Chappelle is definitely one of them.
Yeah, that's interesting. I saw him come out this week and just pretty much nail it to the wall, the comedy wall, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave Chappelle is...
Seinfeld's another one.
The Hodge twins.
They refuse to bow down. And really, comedy is not funny if there are things that are off limits. It's just, it becomes unfunny real quick when there are things you can't joke about.
If you'd have seen what I saw this week, I mean, I can't even begin to describe what it was. It's impossible to describe.
Was it all anti-Trump stuff?
Yes, but it was also anti-Christian and anti-Pence using Christians. And
I often wonder where they find these audiences, because I'm not sure.
Austin?
This doesn't really, well, Austin.
L.A.?
This doesn't really
New York?
Reflect.
Chicago?
Really reflect, though, everybody.
Dallas?
I'm from Chicago. Not everybody in Chicago is an idiot. Like, outside of Chicago, Will County is totally red. You know, I mean, it's just that they ignore half of the population. They play to one half of the population and pretend like that's everybody.
Exactly right. And this is, you know, if you really think about it, this is what China does. It's what Iran does. It's what all of these lefties do. They puff themselves up. We're the biggest and we're the best and this is how we do it and we're going to control everything. And they're really minorities. They don't have any, they have nothing but bluster. That's really all they have.
And that's why they get so surprised when their candidate doesn't win. Another thing is, you know, and you've been in entertainment, Chuck, so you know this, but when you're in entertainment, you know, a lot of these singers and especially at concerts, you know, they'll get political and they turn off half their audience. I mean, mm-hmm. Bruce Springsteen has ticked off half of his blue collar audience to the point where I know people who are refusing to ever see him in concert again. And I've been to concerts like that where I feel like I just need to leave because this person hates me and hates everything about me and I shouldn't be here and I shouldn't have given him any money. I'll tell you one person who I think really rises above all that, and I probably shouldn't even name him because then it'll probably, you know, he'll quit doing it. But Darius Rucker, he's touring right now with Hootie and the Blowfish again, and mm-hmm. What a wonderful concert that was. I just saw it. And I've seen him in concert a couple times, and he never does this to his audience. You know, if he ever talks to us during the concert, it's always to say something unifying, like, you know, I know everybody's angry at one another, but let's love each other more. You know, that's all he ever says.
Yeah, we just saw Bob Seger. And Bob Seger was the same way. It was just about the music and about his career, and it was nothing political on either side of it.
Yeah, it's really strange, these people, I think, who are supposed to be entertainers for the whole country, but they target half of us with negativity and hatred and claim that they're the ones who are anti-hate. I mean, Bette Midler is absolutely unwatchable, and I used to love her.
She's insane.
We all did. Let me give you a touchstone, okay? Bette Midler, the night that Johnny Carson retired.
I remember that. Yeah.
When she came up and she sang and sat on the desk. Yeah. You loved her.
I loved her.
And now she's just,
I loved her.
Of course, by the way, a lot of people think I'm insane too. They think I've just completely, you know, that they never knew me, that I was, I'm this horrible, racist,
not towing the line,
angry person. And yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's just the way it is. It's that confirmation bias.
My mother,
I can vouch for you. You're not angry.
Well, that's the funny thing, right? We always get, attacked and called angry, but I laugh all the time. I mean, right. I laugh at this nonsense. I'm not angry at all. I find that I'm pretty much cheerful most of the time.
The reason they project that on you is because they're angry all the time.
Yeah, they're angry.
So they expect you to be angry all the time.
Yeah, Bette's really lost her mind. My mother actually went to high school with her, was very good friends with her in Hawaii for a very long time. And even when she was performing in Chicago at Kelly's, and she used to go and see her, and she really just lost it. She just lost everything. She just went so far to the left, so crazy.
So Cher's the same, boat.
You know, let me put it in perspective for you, because I think this is really true. Once you're involved in that culture in Hollywood, which they all are at one level or another, either past or present or future, you have to toe that line. And the reason you toe it is not because of America. It's because our entertainment industry is so international. And it's based on international numbers. It's based on international sales. When you go with William Morris or CAA or Universal or Paramount or whoever it is, you're talking to the world. You're not talking to Hollywood. So Hollywood really feels very safe reflecting what they think the world thinks. And the world, by the way, hates Trump because he's successful. They hate America because we're successful. I think that along with George Bush, Obama, a lot of people, a lot of presidents in our past have constantly tried to make America equal by bringing it down so that Europe and foreign countries would feel better about us, so we weren't so powerful. And I think they made excuses for our power, where Trump is just the opposite.
And Chuck, I can give you some data to back that up too, real quick. And that is, I was talking with Kevin Sorbo a couple weeks ago, and I was asking Kevin why are we not seeing more Westerns being produced? And Kevin said the reason they're not producing Westerns is because Westerns do well in the U.S., but they don't do well in Europe. And half of the money has to come from outside of the U.S. So when you shoot a Western, you have to assume that all your money is going to come from North America.
When you see a movie today and you see who's produced it, you'll see the headlines. It's produced by Universal Studios, Warner Brothers, whoever. And then all of a sudden you're going to see all these other things you've never heard of. Also this one, and you're going to see designs and things.
Yeah, there's an average of six production companies.
Exactly. Now. And they're all worldwide. So these people have to cater to the world. And it's just easier to, the world is insane. So why not cater to them instead of America?
Well, there are though pockets of people all throughout the world who really love Trump and do not want to be ruled by the EU. I mean, look at in England, you know, and Tommy Robinson and his crew. And I mean, there's a lot of people who are desperate for some change and want to be like America. I think it's more the leaders that hate America and hate Trump. The problem is,
Megan, as far as I'm concerned, is that governments have a PR department. It's the media. All these pockets of people really don't have any PR.
Right.
So you're fighting this giant PR machine.
Yep. Yep.
And it's
it's a horrific thing. And in here in the United States, we're the people who were supposed to be governing themselves,
mm-hmm.
are now fighting a machine that is set up to destroy them. And I'm seeing this in family courts specifically, so bad right now. Taking children out of homes, CPS is taking children out of homes without due process, without proper warrants. And there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing these parents can do.
So let's jump into the CPS thing. And I want to set the table for this. When we're talking about CPS, we're talking about Child Protective Services. And one of the things that, and I want to get your opinion on this, Megan, when I look at the idea of these red flag laws for gun owners, what I see is I see the same abuses that happen in CPS.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Oh, but totally. Totally. And when the president says, or anybody says who's in favor of these red flag laws, that, oh, due process will be honored. Baloney.
Virginia's got red flag laws right now.
Yeah. No, it won't. And due process is so under assault in this country. It's like the Fourth Amendment doesn't even exist.
Right. So I can call CPS. I could call CPS and tell them that I'm your brother-in-law and I've observed you with your children and I think those kids are in danger.
Right.
And CPS is going to walk into your house.
Yep. And they're going to take my children and do an investigation, and I will be responsible for all the legal fees. I will not be allowed to defend myself properly in court. I will have to, in order to get good representation, I'll have to spend at least $10,000, which when 75% of Americans can't come up with $1,000 in an emergency, where do you think they're going to get $10,000 for a private attorney? They don't. So they get the court-appointed attorney, who's an absolute schlub and on the same team as the state that just took your kid. Now, the worst part about it is that they are incentivized to come into my house and take my child because they're going to get $5,000 to $6,000 per kid that they take out of my house. And they're going to get that every month. And it doesn't always go to the foster family. I don't know what they do with this money. We can't figure it out because a lot of foster families are only getting $700 a month per kid. Where is the other $4,000, $5,000 going?
My wife and I, as Chuck knows, used to take foster kids in. And we've had a dozen of them over the course of our marriage. We were getting $348 for the kid. And we were spending $2,000 a month on them.
Sure.
When we got them, because they show up with a garbage bag full of ragged clothes and no property. You can't get medical care. You get these kids in your house, and the only thing they allow you to do is take them to a doctor that accepts Medicaid. So now if you want to get a doctor to take Medicaid, Chuck, you've got to go down into the worst parts of Detroit where you're likely not to survive to find a doctor. So you end up going to your own doctor and paying for the doctor out of pocket. Right. So the money is not making it to these kids. Mm-mm. And it's not making it to the families that are taking them. But what we saw, Megan, was we saw people who made a cottage industry out of these kids,
mm-hmm.
who they would have six of these kids in their house and they would have two of them to a bedroom. And I mean, these kids were getting no care whatsoever. They were just being housed for the money.
Worse, Mark, worse in Arizona and all over the country. But in Arizona, it's been proven that foster kids were sold into child sex rings and child pornography rings. Oh, so they are selling the children on top of what they're getting from the state. And these are the repeat offenders. This judge in Arizona kept putting the children with this same sex offender, with this same guy who was a pedophile porn ring leader. In the case, if you look up the case of baby Devani, it is absolutely horrific what happened to this child. She was given to him, sold for sex, who knows how many times. Then when they caught him and put him in jail, instead of returning her to her parents who have been fighting for her this whole time, they put her in another foster care home where the woman burned her 80% of her body in hot bath water. She had so many injuries, they had to remove her toes. She was in the hospital and unconscious, and they still wouldn't let her biological family see her. These are the kinds of abuses that parents are suffering under the CPS. It's a horrific nightmare, CPS. And I don't care what anybody says about it. Yeah, sure, there are social workers who love children. Yeah, sure, they think they're doing the right thing. On a whole, parents' rights are being abused so badly in this nation, it should be a crime. It is a crime. It's a Fourth Amendment violation. It's a 14th Amendment violation. And yet these parents can't do anything about it, because while their kids are in the system, they cannot sue. They have to get the kids back first. Then they can sue for civil rights violations. You cannot sue while you're in the middle of trying to get your kid back. And most of the time, they don't get them back. They terminate parental rights. Did you know this, Chuck? 15 months is all it takes. 15 months. They have to hold your kid for 15 months. And after that, they can automatically terminate your parental rights. And what do you think they do? Stall, 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 stall.
And they don't go after, you and I with our kids, Chuck, where we can afford to fight back. They go after families that can't afford to defend themselves.
So I had a friend of mine, I won't mention his name, in California, Los Angeles area. And he and his wife, he's a pastor. And he and his wife adopted two black children, brother and sister. Their father was hopelessly just gone from drugs. Their mother was hopelessly gone from prostitution and drugs. It took forever for them to adopt these kids. I mean, forever. And then Child Protective Services was constantly saying they need to see their mother. They need to see their mother. And so the mother and father, by demand of Child Protective Services, by their authority, would insert them back in. Every time the kids had made progress, they just go back five. I mean, it took years. They finally, these kids are now grown. But I mean, it was a constant battle and fight all the time. And I don't want to sound racist about it, but it was really racist, because they were two black children, and the black people in CPS wanted nothing to do with white people adopting them. And they were pissed. And they tried every way in the world to make it not work if they possibly could, not for the sake of the children, but because the parents were the people who adopted them were white.
Though, I do have to say, though, that in most cases, it is important for children to continue to have a biological connection.
Absolutely, but not while they're on heroin.
Well, no, but listen, studies even say, though, that even with drug use and alcohol abuse, kids are better off with their biological families psychologically. That doesn't mean that we need to leave them in dangerous situations, but I think it does mean that everything must be done to have the families at least have contact. In many of these cases, the foster adoptions that happen are forced adoptions, where they force the parental termination and then they hide the children from the families forever. They can't find them again. And I think that is so damaging to keep children from their biological connections. There's got to be, there are grandparents, there are aunts and uncles, there are other people who are connected biologically to those children who may be at least someone they can visit. You know, keeping them away completely, I mean, I'm sure there are cases where that needs to happen.
Look, you know, it's kind of like, if you think about it, Megan, it's like prisons. They're institutionalized. They just house people. They just house children. They don't really do anything for them. They just make sure that they're, well, maybe they're safe here, so we'll put them here. We'll check on them every now and then, and hopefully they'll be okay. But it's not.
Well, and the group homes are really bad. I have a father right now that I've been talking to whose daughter is 14 years old or 15 years old, mm-hmm. and she was taken from him under ridiculous circumstances. It was because she got angry with him for changing her schools, and so she told somebody at school that he hit her when it wasn't true. She came out afterwards and said, "That wasn't true. Please don't take me from him. I lied." And it was too late. They did. They stuck her in a juvenile home, which is basically like a prison.
Prison.
She's not being fed properly. She's always hungry when she sees him. Now, shouldn't think about this. In this country, a 14-year-old can have an abortion without their parents' consent. We hold their opinion so high about their own self that we allow them to get abortions and medical procedures without parental permission. However, this same 14 or 15-year-old girl who could go get an abortion can't tell a judge she wants to live with her father. That will not be honored.
And the Democrats want her to be able to vote when she's 16.
Yes, but they won't let her decide where she wants to live. So they keep locking her up in these institutions where she doesn't belong, even though she's begging to go home. And her father is begging for her to come back. It's an absolute, and this is in California, it's an absolute tragedy what's happening to these parents. And he doesn't have money for a decent attorney. He's got no hope.
What we found, Chuck, what my wife and I found out was the kids that really needed to be removed from their parents were the ones that it seemed like it took them forever to do. And the kids who were taken by mistake, and Sal and I knew this kid didn't belong in the system, those were the ones that they didn't want to put back.
No, they don't want to put them back. Once they're in, they don't want to put, and I can't explain it. I can't explain why they ignore the ones who truly need to be removed, like AJ Frund in Illinois. You know, they had been to his house 17 times on a calls of abuse, and they don't ever take him out of the home. And so the next time they find him, the kid is dead. You know, these are the things. And yet, if the mother that I'm working with in Colorado right now, her son was taken, and this was the only allegation that they gave her, that she might be making up his medical, exaggerating his medical condition.
So Munchausen's.
Yeah, supposedly. Although she's had a psychological evaluation through her own psychologist or someone not connected to the county, who says she doesn't have it. Doesn't exhibit any of the signs.
So, first off, what we're talking about here, folks, is Munchausen by proxy.
Yes.
Which basically means that a mother creates, or a father could do it, but typically a mother creates.
Any caregiver.
Creates all of these medical conditions in their head, and they put these conditions on the child. So they create this child has allergies, the child has all these conditions that they don't really have. Now, the thing is, Munchausen by proxy is like trying to find a unicorn.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Hardly anybody actually has it. And there are some professionals in psychology and psychiatry that believe it doesn't really even exist.
Well, Megan, think of this though. I'm going to give this to Chuck to talk on this. Chuck, what's the difference between this and the fact that if you look at the news media, everyone in the country is transgender?
Okay, here's the deal. I know a little bit about this because I watched Dr. Phil. Don't laugh. And there was a girl on Dr. Phil with her mother who claimed to have Munchausen disease, whatever.
Munchausen, yes.
And literally this went on for years. She was in a wheelchair. She had cancer. She had every kind of thing, but she didn't have any of these things. It completely stunted her growth as a person. And she was there to talk and testify about it. Here's the problem. You get one story like this, and the media and the industry that they represent all of a sudden says, this is what's happening everywhere.
Right.
It's not happening everywhere at all.
And worse, you find it
in politics,
doctors,
everywhere.
They get these doctors, Chuck, who are child abuse pediatricians, and this is a very small number of pediatricians. And there's one doctor in particular who runs around talking about this around the country about Munchausen syndrome by proxy, and he sees it everywhere.
That's my point.
Everywhere.
One shows up and they see it everywhere.
This guy who was the head of the Broward County, he was the medical division guy, the medical supervisor of Broward County, Florida. He had diagnosed parents with this disease without ever having seen them. And that's what got their children taken away from
them. Diagnosing Trump now without ever seeing him.
I mean, that's illegal. That's not even, yeah. But he's got what do you call it? Immunity because he works for the state. So you can't even sue him.
Well, this happened in the 80s, by the way, Megan. You may not remember this. Chuck will remember this. There was a situation that happened back in the 80s. In the world of hypnosis, which I'm a hypnotist and I know this field, what had happened was a couple of hypnotists started doing something called repressed memory syndrome.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what was happening was the hypnotists were giving people the memory of child abuse. And now
right on my doorstep in Manhattan Beach when I lived in California, right in a school right there. The whole school was torn apart and the neighborhood was torn apart. Families were torn apart. It was just rife with child abuse and it never happened.
But there was no evidence. The evidence was very strong to the contrary, other than the fact that a hypnotist managed to implant a false memory. And what it's really called is false memory syndrome, but they made it as repressed memory syndrome. And Chuck, you can expand on that. What happened? Was it, now, did it like sweep through a whole area where there was like 10 students all of a sudden or what?
Oh, no, it was a kindergarten in Manhattan Beach is where it started. And it involved the entire family, the son, the mother, the
daughter. Yeah, that was the, I remember that.
Remember that? Yeah.
That was the daycare fiasco, right?
Exactly. And it went on forever.
The Satanism thing.
Yes. It always usually borders on Satanism somewhere when you get into hypnosis, but you know,
hey, wait a minute. I resemble that remark.
I mean, you know, it's always go to
McMartin's, the McMartin preschool.
McMartin's, exactly. Right. Well, I lived in Manhattan Beach at the time while this was going on, and it was astounding. My first impression was, oh my God, look at what they've done to these children. And then as the story developed over 2 years, you finally realize that these people didn't do anything.
Exactly.
Nothing. They were just accused by a bunch of people of doing something for their own benefit, whatever it was. And it literally almost tore the community apart.
Well, the truth is that Munchausen syndrome by proxy is very, very rare. And some experts say they think it isn't even a thing, that people who do this to their children, people who legitimately actually harm them in this way, have other disorders like narcissistic personality disorder that leads them to seek attention, and that Munchausen syndrome by proxy is very controversial. And in fact, they've even stopped using that phrase. Now they're calling it fictitious illness disorder.
Is that like being residentially flexible now instead of homeless?
Yeah. So they're just changing the name of it because they know that most people believe that Munchausen syndrome by proxy is a joke. You know, it's not true. And yes, some people do this to their children. Very, very few. There's just was a recent case in Texas that was real bad where she was injecting fecal material into the IV. When they caught her on camera. But in the case of Cindy Absug in Colorado, they have absolutely zero evidence that any of this is true. And in fact, we have letters from doctors who were treating her son saying, this is not true. This was my diagnosis. We're still trying to get to the bottom of this. The CPS never even asked my opinion.
But we've lost the presumption of innocence.
Yes.
In this country. We watched it in the Kavanaugh hearings.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We've lost it. And especially if you look at family court, if your children are taken by CPS, you are presumed guilty and you must now prove your innocence. There is no innocent until proven guilty in CPS cases because you're not in criminal court.
But we've lost it everywhere.
Everything. If you accuse somebody, then they're guilty.
Right. We have to start fighting for our Fourth Amendment again. We have got to start saying, no, due process matters. The Constitution matters. We cannot allow these government agents to step all over the Constitution and do nothing about it. These people need to be held accountable. Sean McMillan in California, he's an attorney. He is holding CPS accountable to the tune of millions of dollars every single case he wins. It's amazing because he's the first attorney, it seems, to figure out that there is a bucket full of money to be made in suing these people for the violations of the Constitution. And he has sued CPS on Fourth Amendment, 14th Amendment, taking kids without warrants or on warrants without exigent circumstances. And that's a big one. They claim emergency status, but then they don't prove exigent circumstances. So it was all null and void. He has, the case of Rachel Bruno is a great one to look up because he just won her two multi-million dollar lawsuits against the county, the hospital, and the sheriff's department for taking her children without a warrant, without exigent circumstances. In her case, they used a pre-stamped warrant from 2008 to take a kid in 2015. Now, I want to know what kind of time travel machine they had to go back in time to get that warrant.
They used the Obama FISA warrant model.
Yes. Yes. But how scary. Rachel Bruno is one of the very few who got her kids back, who got her children back. And it was a darn near miracle that she did. And that's the only reason why she was able to sue for a civil case because she actually got her children back. Most of these cases, the parents will never get to sue in the civil courts because they don't get their kids back.
But not just in state court. We have federal prosecutors.
Maybe that's why they don't get their kids back, because they know they'll be sued.
We have, I don't, we yeah, have, yeah.
We have, well, I mean, think what? About it.
That's absolutely correct. And in the case of Melissa Deagle right now, that's what's happening. One of her kids is aging out of the system and is about to sue the state. So what do? They put the mother in jail. She's actually sitting in jail for charges from like 5 years ago that were proven false. It's an absolute, I don't know what we're going to do about it, because I'm at my wit's end. I'm starting to think I'm never going to cover one of these cases ever again, because I never get a happy ending ever. And I'm so tired of it. I don't know what to do. And I'm at the point of giving up, because no one seems to be able to help. There's no one.
We have federal prosecutors who are withholding evidence that could exonerate people. We have an IRS as an example, Chuck. If you went, let's say that you decided you were going to start taking cash out of your own bank account, and you go to the bank and you take out $5,000, and you decide you're going to buy a car cash and you take out $15,000. The IRS can look at your cash withdrawals and say, you know what? We think Chuck Woolery's up to something illegal, and seize your assets, freeze every dime you have, and now tell you, now go to court to fight to get them back. Now try fighting to get your money back when you have all your money frozen.
Right.
And there is no presumption of innocence happening whatsoever. We are completely heading into a totalitarian model.
You're talking about this right now while AG Barr is got some cases in front of him. I mean, this stuff is all interconnected, oddly enough. You've got James Comey, who obviously has broken the law. You've got McCabe, who's broken the law. And if these people aren't held accountable, we really do have a two-tier justice system. And our justice system is so out of whack on so many levels, dealing with so many people. You're talking about child protective services. That's just one thing.
It's not a justice system. It's a just-us system.
Let me ask you something. Who do you go to when the judge in your case is breaking the law?
Yeah, you've experienced this, Chuck. Who do you go to when the judge is breaking the law?
Yeah, right.
Who do you go to? Who do you go to? I'll tell you who you go to. This is what they tell you. You go to the board, the overseeing board, right?
I did.
And who's on the board? All members of the bar.
Yeah.
So they're investigating themselves. Exactly. In the case in Colorado, the judge is sitting on motions for over 60 days that the mother's attorney has put in. Just sitting on them.
Went through this. We literally just went through this.
Refusing to rule, refusing to hold a hearing. So I call the attorney general of Colorado. I call the attorney general's office. I say, hey, who do I report to that a judge is delaying justice? Who do I report that to? Do you know what he told me? This is the best part ever. He goes, well, I don't really know what to tell you because we represent the judiciary. I said, what? What? The attorney general represents the judiciary? He says, yeah, they're our client. I can't really tell you who to go after my client. He said that to me.
Yeah.
So what can we do, Megan?
Who do the people go to when the justice system is screwing them?
So who do they go to?
Nobody. There's nobody to go to.
There is nobody to go to.
So what do we need to do?
You can appeal to a higher court. You can appeal to the next higher court, but it doesn't matter because all of those judges are answerable to no one. No one. It's supposed to be the assembly. They're supposed to answer to the assembly. And the assembly is supposed to be able to, they hold the power of impeachment. That's what the Constitution says, that the assembly can impeach a judge. Do they ever do it?
No.
No, no. No, they don't ever do it.
Chuck, you and I need to become judges.
Yeah, right. We'd be safe for life.
I don't know what we need to do.
At least we'd be honest.
Yeah.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but when you say, what do we do? I'm like, heck if I know. I'm at my wit's end. I don't know where else to go, but I know one thing. I know that the founding fathers never intended us to be ruled by tyrannical judges from a bench. I know that to be true. So how do we stop it?
I guess I haven't read it completely, but kind of Men in Black, this Mark Levin book that he wrote several years ago, was all about the corruption of our judges and everything. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing that people, we trust in all the things we shouldn't trust in, because we've been led to believe that we should trust the government, we should trust the judges, we should trust. And I'm not saying that everybody is untrustworthy, but just enough in powerful positions will just absolutely screw up everything.
I love my country, but I fear my government.
And yeah, that's the wrong way, right? They're supposed to fear us. But right now, they do not fear us. Not at all. They know that they can silence and shut us up easily. Right now, the mother in Colorado has a hearing. The state has now, they filed an emergency motion to stop all visitation with her son because she had the nerve to complain that he reported what sounds like child abuse to her in the foster system. He said his sphincter hurt. Now, what 7-year-old do you know uses the word sphincter? And when she complained about that, when she made a fuss about it, they filed an emergency motion to stop her visitation. That's where she's at right now. And there is nothing that I think we're going to be able to do to stop it.
This is...
So this is
we have to keep trying.
Solution is what you're saying.
No, we have to keep trying.
The solution is a federal investigation of CPS from the top down. We need a federal. But can we trust our federal investigators? What did we just get done talking about?
Yeah.
This is the other problem. Which federal investigators can we count on to be honest with us?
And this is why I don't trust these red flag law idea.
Me
because
either.
You know what's going to happen. What's going to happen? Is somebody's going to break up with their girlfriend. It'll be an amicable breakup. She's going to be vindictive, just as an example. And she's going to call the police and say, oh, he's dangerous. He has guns and he's dangerous and he threatened me. And there goes his due process. There goes his Second Amendment. And he's done nothing. And now show up in court and prove the negative. How do you prove a negative?
Yeah, you don't. And then it'll probably be on a list forever. You know, does that get you put on the watch list too? Does that get you put on the terrorist no-fly list? Can you fly in a plane then? I mean, the whole thing is, it's a disaster.
So my ex-father-in-law was David Nelson of the Nelsons.
Yes.
Remember Ozzie and Harriet and Ricky and David?
Uh-huh, yep.
So David found out his name was on a no-fly list. So here's David Nelson, who was from the Ozzie and Harriet family, couldn't fly because somebody named David Nelson was on the
I was on it also, Chuck.
It went on for like several years. He couldn't get his name taken off, and they wouldn't identify him as David Nelson. I mean, it was hysterical.
I was on it also, and it happens when you have a common name.
Mm-hmm.
So Mark Young, very common. David Nelson, very common name.
Hey, Megan Fox, I could be on it. That's a very common name too.
I know. There's another Megan Fox out there that does all kinds of crazy stuff.
Nobody's named Woolery.
True.
But actually,
you're probably safe.
Yeah, I was actually on a list, and I had to go to the FBI and get them to pull my actual jacket, and there is one on all of us, and remove that connotation and insert another letter into it. Amazing. So every time I went to an airport, I would be stopped. Did you ever live in Cleveland? I mean, I got to the point where I would walk up and say, no, I've never lived in Cleveland.
Which made you immediately suspicious.
Exactly.
Why is this guy telling us he never lived
in Cleveland? Why is he telling us he didn't ever live in Cleveland? Right?
So, Megan, I have a question for you. I've got a question for you and Chuck.
Oh, boy.
Look, I'm going off topic here for a second. Here's the question.
Is it about Bachelor in Paradise? Because I'd like to get back to that.
No, it's not. We'll get back there in a second.
Oh, no. We'll never see Bachelor in
Paradise. We're coming back to it.
Megan, I'll be watching it. You'll be watching it. We'll just have to change texts or something.
Yes. We'll have to text one another.
You guys will be texting each other watching this TV show. So we've just now been told that we cannot call a felon a felon.
All right.
What are we supposed to call?
They're just as involved individual or so. What was that? Something
individual. That, individual previously just was it previously involved with the justice system?
Okay.
Because if you call them a felon, now these are people who are convicted felons.
Just before you go on any further with this, is this one of those stories that came out like we were just talking about, where the minority? There's one person in San Francisco.
No. This is a rule in California.
All of California.
Oh, this is all of California.
I believe, is it all of California, Patrick, or is it just L.A.?
No, it wasn't L.A. It came out of San Francisco, I believe.
We're checking it now, but it is a law. It is not an opinion.
Okay. If it came out of San Francisco, though, you can just chalk it up immediately as crazy. I mean,
right.
So, but this rule is, it's a whole new set of language, and one of them is convicted felon. Convicted felon now has to be person previously involved with law enforcement, which, by the way,
could be an ex-sheriff.
Isn't the victim also a person previously involved in with law enforcement?
True. What is the purpose of it, to so that they can get employment?
It's because it's harmful to their little psyches.
Well, I think there might be, and maybe I'll just play devil's advocate for a second here, but there may be an issue because of employment. I do know that ex-felons have a very difficult time getting jobs, and that does seem anathema to, you know, the rehabilitation a part of prison. So if you've served your time and then you always have ex-felon on your record, good luck getting a job. I've seen it in my own family. You know, you screw up at 19 and then you at 40, you still can't get a job because you have to check the box that says, you know, I've been convicted of a felony. And so if it is to help with the rehabilitation process, you know, I might be okay with that. I think at some point you do have to be able to expunge some of that so people can work.
See, now there I'll agree with you.
If you can't get a job, you're going to turn back to crime, clearly.
I'll agree with you that you could expunge your record. But in this particular case, the claim was that this causes emotional damage.
Emotional damage.
And the same goes for homeless person. A homeless person is now supposed to be called residentially flexible.
Seriously?
I'm not making this up.
What is the... Okay, none of this stuff means anything. I realize...
That's exactly right, Megan. Here's the deal.
Yes.
None of it means anything.
None of it means anything.
That's exactly what the left wants to do. They want to change the language where nothing means anything.
Right.
So you can't attach
here's the thing
they're
right here.
They're very good at that, Chuck. Do you know how good they are at that?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
It's very scary. Also,
we're very bad at letting them do it, too.
Yeah, we're very bad at letting them do it because to a person like me, I think, who cares? I mean, we've got bigger things to worry about. But then they go and they really do change the language, and then you're really using different words for things, like cisgender, for instance. Mm-hmm. Cisgender is now a word I find myself using, which is ridiculous.
Right. We never asked to be called that.
That's right.
But here's the story.
I don't accept it.
Board of Supervisors voted to change the words. And the words they got rid of was felon, inmate, convict, and prisoner. Because these are terms that separate people from society and institutionalize racism and supremacy against these people. Now, here's my question. If it is racist or supremacist or bad or hard on people to be called a convicted felon once they have been convicted as a felon, why is it okay for a woman to write a newspaper calling a Trump supporter a Trump terrorist?
Yeah, good question.
So
question.
I can call you a terrorist by virtue of your red hat, and I'm not injuring
without you. Ever having been convicted of terrorism.
Right. But I'm causing no harm to you.
Right.
By doing that. But I may cause harm to someone who robbed a bank and was proven to have robbed a bank. If I might mention the fact that he previously robbed a bank.
Well, this is where we're at. Everything good is bad and everything bad is good. We're upside down. We're in the upside down. This is the upside down.
We literally are. And it's funny that people in the 30s predicted all of this. That's what I find fascinating.
As well as Ayn Rand did, too.
And the Bible. The Bible.
Well, there's that old thing, but that's kind of outdated.
Yeah, right. Thousands of years ago.
All right,
I quote the Bible every now and then to make a point, and people just go crazy.
Just do that to cause trouble. So before we end the broadcast, we got to come back now. To what is the show? Is this The Bachelor we're talking about?
Bachelor in Paradise. Come on.
Bachelor in Paradise. I don't know anything about this.
Paradise. They're important.
Well, Chuck and I can tell you all about it.
All right, so
they're in the land of iguanas and the fruity drinks and little. So
is this also the same show as The Bachelor? Or is this a different show?
Yes, they take all
the it's kind of a cast off from The Bachelor. People who didn't make it on The Bachelor go to Bachelor in Paradise Island.
Apparently, they all they all socialize together and they all date one another. And then so they just decide, well, let's make a TV show out of it,
right?
And let everyone else watch them make fools of themselves. And
what they do is they take every little incidence of insecurity and
exploit it.
So
What?
Do you remember the cartoon Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Island of Misfit Toys?
Yes.
Is that what we're talking about?
kind of like that, because these people really do have emotional difficulties and emotional problems, but like everyone else does. I mean, these are young people.
Last night, I saw a girl go completely insane. I don't know what I'm going to do. And the medics rush in, and her first response is, you're going to be okay. Don't worry about it. Can I have guacamole? Laying down on the cot. And I'm going, what? What the hell is that? I have guacamole?
I do think it's the reason I watch these shows, and I always tell people it's for my job, but that's not true. That's not true at all.
It's a good excuse, though.
It's a good excuse, but it's not true at all. I'm fascinated by it. I've been watching The Bachelor for like all 25 seasons or however long it's been out. And I just started watching this Bachelor in Paradise. But I think fascinates me is that all people are looking for the same thing, right? All people are looking for love and acceptance. And yet the ways that these people go about doing it, the young people, because they're so confused by the upside down that we're living in, they're so confused that they can't even tell it. Like you said, there's no communication. They can't even tell each other what they want. In the case of, they've been told that the way to find love is to just be completely easy and loose and sleep with every person you possibly can. And yet this brings them constant pain and they never realize it.
That isn't how it works.
And
Chuck, you never told me this.
Blake, this bad guy, Blake, right? He's already slept with like five women on the island.
Yeah. And he can't understand why nobody likes him.
He can't understand. And all the girls are so miserable. Mm-hmm. And he thinks that he's just done nothing wrong. And, you know, it's interesting to watch, because it just basically reinforces the truths that I know to be true, which is, in order to be happy, you must find one person, not 10.
This is a rerun, Chuck, of a show from the 80s.
Yeah,
which I believe was called Chuck Woolery at the Playboy Mansion.
You know, it's very funny. I was talking last night. We were watching this, and I said, you know, it's really funny. It's like they're expecting all these people to find love. Okay, I've spent a lot of time at the Playboy Mansion. This is like New Year's Eve at the Playboy Mansion. Nobody's looking for love, okay?
No one's looking for love.
That's what I'm saying. This is a remake of that old show, Chuck Woolery at the Playboy Mansion.
It's funny you bring it up, because I literally just said that last night.
Exactly.
This is not the recipe for true love.
New Year's Eve at the Playboy Mansion.
By the way, I'm gonna get you guys' opinion on one last thing here, and this is the most important news in politics since Pat Paulson ran for president.
Since we're looking for Bigfoot.
Yeah. You may be too young to remember Pat Paulson.
I remember Pat Paulson. Yeah,
ran for president in 1968.
It was on the Brothers.
Oh, I'm definitely too young. I wasn't born yet.
The Smothers Brothers.
Smothers Brothers, right. Yeah.
Yes, I was a child, but I remember it. Mm-hmm. Anyways, this is the biggest news since Pat Paulson, and that is Joe Walsh is now going to run for president against
Donald Trump. He is a great guitarist, though, isn't he?
Not the same guy, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think it's funny how even the National Review types are saying that Joe Walsh is some good candidate. And it's like, wait a minute. I thought your whole problem with Trump was his rhetoric and how awful it is. Have you seen Joe Walsh's Twitter feed? Because it's a big pile of steaming mess.
Yeah, he claims that Obama's a Muslim.
I've said things on Twitter that are racist, but I'm not a racist.
He's used the N-word.
I mean, he is the definition of a shock jock, and they want to put a shock jock.
I'm watching something last night. I'm watching The New Power. Okay, I've watched Power before, but now I'm watching the new season. Listen to some of the lyrics on that. I mean, talk about the N-word. It's like unbelievable. There's lyrics on this thing as the show progresses and everything. I'm not sure who does the music. Some famous rapper does the music to it.
Well, but it's okay if they're dark colored. So
if you're racist for being
brown, it's okay.
But I mean, it's amazing to listen to.
Chuck, brown people cannot be racist. Did you not know this?
No, I didn't know that.
No, they can't be. No,
Chuck, I just taught my daughter this. See, my daughter's from Guatemala.
Right. She's very brown.
And has very brown skin. And I was just telling her last week that it's impossible for her to be racist, that she has a free get out of racist jail card now.
Thank God she calls me Uncle Chuck, because I feel safe.
I know, because she can accuse everybody of being anything now, and you can't say anything back to her.
Mm.
And funny thing is,
she has not witnessed or experienced any of this discrimination that everybody keeps claiming that she should be witnessing.
And oh, she better not say that in public or she'll lose her card immediately.
Just to wrap this up, though, let's wrap this up on this, because I am fascinated by the fact that we have moved as a country and mended our fences, I think, so well on racism and things that have happened in the past. And I don't think we put Band-Aids over it. I think people have really come together and tried to genuinely fix the problem. Now, there's always going to be racists on both sides, on all sides. People are just, you know, by nature can be racist in one way or another. But not the kind of racist. I sent a tweet out not too long ago that we just got pounded for. And I said, racism isn't racist anymore. Or racist isn't racism anymore. And what I was talking about, if you disagree with the left, you're racist. So it has nothing to do with race. All you got to do is disagree with them. You can disagree with anything, the kind of car they drive, you're a racist. I saw something about hosing down. This is true. I just saw this in an article. Hosing down the streets of San Francisco is racist. You know why?
The hoses.
They were used to.
Get this. The New York Times just said that candy bars are racist. Sugar is racist because of the history's ugly history with sugar plantations. So now candy is racist.
What about cotton clothes? I mean, shouldn't we be wiping out cotton shirts?
Well, remember then? Hobby Lobby was trying to sell cotton as decoration and they got called racist for that?
Well, anyway, here we've gone down this road of everything is racist, and everybody keeps saying, well, you know, you've overused it, and it doesn't have the power that it once had. I don't agree with that. I think it still has the power that it had. I see where it's overused and all that kind of stuff, but the thing that kills me is I don't believe we're a racist nation. I don't think we're racist like people say we are. I don't think this is a thing that is on the front of our heads all the time, and that's all we think about is what color you are.
Of course it's not.
People can't understand when Martin Luther King said, it's not the color of your skin, it's the content of your character. Of course, he would be, you know, by the wayside now with most people if they were afraid of.
Oh, they'd be calling him an Uncle Tom.
Exactly. And the funny thing about it is, it really is about the content of your character, just like it is with white people. There are lots of white people I don't like. It's not because they're white. It's because I don't like the content of their character. I don't like who they are. I don't like their ideology. I don't hate them, but I don't like them. This is so simple and so reasonable, and it just seems like our media and our politics just can't get their head around what's normal. And like you said, it's an upside-down world. It's so upside-down that we accept crap like this as dessert every day.
Chuck, why would you expect mentally abnormal people to behave in a normal fashion?
Well,
because that's what you're talking about. You're talking about getting abnormal people to behave
so
in a reasonable way.
Saying that everybody's seeing Bigfoot.
I actually think that the media,
it's got to be Bigfoot, and that's where it is, and we just can't seem to find him, but he's out there somewhere.
I think the media does it on purpose. I think they're doing it to divide. They're doing it to divide people, to keep people divided and to keep them, you know, separated from one another. And I think if you walk out your door and you turn off your TV and you turn off your Twitter and you just walk out your door and go into your neighborhood, what you see there is what's real. And what I see every day is people of all races working together, shopping together, smiling at one another.
They will hate you for even saying that.
It's not true what they're saying. None of it's true, because all you have to do is walk outside and look around.
And they'll say, well, you're white. Of course, you think that way.
But what we know in the media.
I'm from Chicago, and I spent lots of time in the city in Chicago. And you know what I see in Chicago? People of all races working together, eating together, not having race riots, not shouting insults at one another, people getting along. That's what's real.
And that is what's real.
Media, none of what they're saying is real.
Let's end on what is real. Campuses
where they're paying people, paying agitators to start this crap. None of that is real.
Because no one watches the Good News Channel.
There is no Good News Channel.
Exactly. So they need to create the bizarre. They need to create the strife.
You know what I have to say, though, as a member of the media, and I'm sorry, I'm guilty of this. People don't read good news.
They don't.
They don't read it. I can put it out all day long and they won't click on it. But you know what they do read about? You know, drag queen story hour. That's what they read about. So that's what I write about, because that's what people read. So it's a vicious cycle, because if you put out good news and nobody reads it, you pretty much stop doing that after a while, because, you know, you get paid based on who reads what, who reads it.
Our brains are hardwired, by the way, genetically, our brains are hardwired to look for the bad news. And literally, very quickly, it's a part of the brain called the amygdala, and it's the part of the brain that keeps us alive, and it looks for the bad news, because bad news keeps us safe, but good news doesn't keep us safe. So we're hardwired to always zero in on the bizarre, on the dangerous, on the sensational, because we, on a very old style of thinking about the brain, we're hardwired into this information that we think is going to keep us safe. Megan, it has been wonderful to have you on Blunt Force Truth.
Telling me that it's been great to have Megan Fox on the show.
It has been.
Come back.
Thanks for having me. I hope I do get to come back. I would love to talk more with you about The Bachelor.
Bachelor in Paradise, too. It'll be fun.
We could do a whole episode just on The Bachelor in Paradise.
No, you don't want to do that.
Folks, if you go to the bluntforcetruth.com, go to the show notes with the show with Megan Fox. We'll have links to her prolific Twitter account, because she's obviously a big fan of Twitter, and her books. We'll have links where you can find the books and all of her social media. And Megan, we hope you will come back with us.
And, I would love to be back.
And Megan, thank you again. We've investigated how deep you are and how shallow I am. So stop it. On the show. And thanks, everybody, for listening and watching us on Blunt Force Truth. And we'll see you next time.